As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
A formidable beast, the grizzly. As strong as an ox, fast as a horse, quick as a cat. No animal but man can challenge him.
It's a new day. Yes, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
to Wild and Crazy Nights.
The Athletic presents Hogan Johns.
Hogan for the win.
We're in a corner.
We're going to consistently put players in position to succeed. Most important piece is we're going to take the North and never give it back.
From CHGO, it's Adam Hogan.
I don't think that this is a full rebuild, but you definitely have to retool your roster.
And from The Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
Hey, what's up, Flus?
And we're going to have measurable ways for standards of performance every single rep, every single game.
Anyway, who cares?
Now, here they are, the Adams, Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in. Hogue and Johns with you in early week edition, recording on a Monday. Just work better with the Bears schedule this week with the Soldier Field practice on Tuesday, so you're getting the episode a little bit early. What's up, Johnsy?
What's going on, Hoagie Cat?
Hoagie Cat.
Nah,
Johnsy Babe.
Awkward. What's up, man? Kev? Kevin Fishbane is here with us.
I feel like it's been forever since the three of us were together.
Gentlemen, it's great to be back. Bears, football. Podcast
and your dirty muddy Ducks hat, just still wearing it, huh?
He likes that hat.
He does. Yeah. He wears it often.
This is brand new.
That is not brand new. Yeah, it's fated to be brand new.
I texted a photo of this to our good friend Patrick Finley, the fashionista of the beat. Just want to run it by him before I purchase it.
That's a way to put it. Yeah.
It.
Okay.
I think. Were you looking for fashionista?
Fashionista. I don't know if they're gendered or not, but also gender is just a construct. Don't want to get into all that, but
here we go.
Pat said go for it, and so it's a new hat in the rotation. I figured, you know, Hogue would appreciate it on this podcast where we've talked about the Mighty Ducks.
I like that. I like it.
I like it, but that's still not a new hat. No way. Too faded.
No, it's one of those hats they sell where it looks weathered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I could do a whole
podcast on what motivated you to buy a Mighty Ducks hat, but that's not why we're here. We'll save that for the Athletics Duck podcast. Do they have one?
No, but I think I now know my off-season project.
I was going to say, Kevin will host the Mighty Ducks pod.
Yeah.
From here on out, we just appointed him the host of that show. Quack, quack, quack. Mr. Fishbane. Anyway, we're here to talk about the Bears. You can follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, at Adam Johns, at K Fishbane. You should read those guys on The Athletic, theathletic.com/HoganJohns, where you go to get a good deal. I am at allchgo.com. Daily shows on the Bears there at CHGO. Another newsletter coming out Wednesday if you'd like to subscribe to that. Greatly appreciate it. All right, where should we start? Full disclosure, I took the weekend off. Feel like you guys need to tell me. All of a sudden, I checked back in last night, and the entire roster's hurt. So what did you guys do to people over the weekend?
We hurt them. It's Bears football and training camp. I don't know. Nothing has changed really since Friday. There's more scouted looks in practice. Justin Fields made some very good throws. He made some very bad throws. I think they could still run the ball. Offensive line is still full of moving pieces. The storylines have remained the same through 10 practices.
Yes, I would agree with that. I think the list of injuries probably is not that rare for this time of year.
Yeah, I agree with that. Like, off the top of my head, Kevin, I was thinking about this. Like, I feel like last year, the second the pads went on, like, 15 guys went out.
Yeah, I actually found a tweet from mine from a year ago in which, in last year, you also had the COVID-19 reserve list. So I had a tweet from last year where, like, half the roster was either out or limited or ramping back up. I think the problem with the current list is, like, Kyler Gordon is one of the most important Bears. Like, Bayless Jones Jr. is one of the most important Bears. So, you know, like, there's not that Roquan Smith is still out. So there's not that many guys in this team that are name brand guys. So when you have a bunch of guys who are out, it kind of makes a difference on the field. Like, when you already don't have a whole lot of wide receivers or corners and you're missing three or four of those guys, and, you know, undrafted rookie Jalen Jones is your first team nickel, and Isaiah Coulter is getting some run with the starters at wide receiver, it's maybe a little bit more noticeable.
Forgot Chris Fink.
Right. Chris Finke. Fink.
He kind of seems like a okay player, though.
He does. I'm about to sneeze. Hold on.
Oh, go. Here we go again.
John's I have a mute button now, though.
Oh, don't mute it. Then it's not as much fun.
Oh, there's another one. Someone who's watching on YouTube should GIF that.
Woo! It's allergy season already. I've noticed that.
I feel like it's always allergy season for you.
That's not true.
Do you guys think that Kyle Shanahan or John Lynch listen to this podcast?
Yes. It's part of the competitive advantage that they gain over the Bears.
Right. So, you know, we should maybe be a little careful about what we talk about that happened in the weekend practices.
No. I have some questions for you.
Hi, Kyle, by the way. And now I want Kevin to explain what the hell he's talking about.
Well, everything that happens is, all you know, it's competitive advantage. San Francisco 49ers, Hogue, are the first team on the Bears' schedule.
No, I get that. But now I want you to tell us what happened.
Oh, there was nothing very secretive on that Sunday practice. It was short. A lot of guys didn't practice. It was short, and they were in shorts.
There were two plays I wrote down from all of practice. It was a play-action touchdown to Tajay Sharpe from Justin Fields.
Okay.
That would qualify under those well-designed, nicely-run plays that you like, Adam Hogue.
Yep, from the goal line. And then there was a deep ball, go-up-and-get-it catch by undrafted rookie Kevin Shaw, thrown by Nathan Peterman. It might have been the best deep ball, or I shouldn't say best deep ball, probably the best long gain the Bears have had all camp, and it was Nathan Peterman to Kevin Shaw. Anyways, the reason I'm bringing up that is the Bears posted both of those plays on social media. So, so nothing's really that secretive from Sunday's practice.
Okay. All right. John said he has a bunch of questions for us, so I'm intrigued by these.
Well, I want to steer this conversation a little bit. Okay.
Here we go.
This is so there's 10 days of camp. I think we have a good picture of how Matt Eberflus is running things. We've seen some new things. What stands out to you in terms of, I'm impressed by this from Matt Eberflus so far through 10 camp practices?
Yeah, I would say that my number one thing, if you were to say, okay, what's the number one like good thing? What's the number one bad thing? Number one good thing, I think, is the coaching competency seems to be there. I think that they are willing to, my guess is, and I don't know this for sure, but my guess is when they get in there in their coaching meetings, they're not too concerned about the guys dropping out of practice with these little injuries that are popping up. I think they want to see who can handle this, who can fight through these grueling practices that they've had, and they've certainly stepped it up a notch, like in the last four or so. And I think that's the foundation they want. I think that they're thinking beyond just this season when it comes to that. Now, on the flip side, I remember hearing this from some former players about Lovie Smith's first year, where it was very similar, where like they're like, we're going to practice hard, physical, nonstop, blah, blah, blah. And then everybody got hurt. And then Lovie actually ended up backing off the next season. So I wonder if, but I don't think that that was necessarily a bad thing, because I think you want to set that foundation, right? You want to set those expectations that this is not going to be a pushover type camp. So I think that that's all good.
Yeah, I think that there are fewer times during practice where I'm sitting down and putting my notebook away and checking Twitter or talking to you guys. Like, there's just a lot of action going on. You know, it's funny. I got reminded of, remember the 10-10-10 practices that, yeah, that Matt Nagy had? And they were like once every few days. And it was like 10 offense, 10 defense.
Of his own construction, too. His own idea of how to run a practice.
Yeah. And they were like kind of walkthrough type stuff. They don't, the Bears have not done that at all. I mean, every practice is. But I will say the Chiefs did a 10-10-10 last week. So it's.
That's okay. They have good players.
Right, right. So, like, you know, I think you're onto something, Hogue, with the idea that, like, the way this team is being built, I think you do have to kind of go into it with this Eberflus style. Like, I'm starting to. There's a lot of analogies or comparisons you can make to John Fox when he got here. Like, I mean, different because John Fox was this veteran head coach who'd done it for a long time. But the idea of somebody coming in, and so much of this year is about installing a program and implementing a culture and just setting the Bears on this track to get them far away from what happened the last couple of years. And I think from what he's done in training camp, it looks fine. Well, I cannot at all correlate any of that to whether or not they're going to win football games or be a good team.
Yeah, but I think that one thing you just brought up is a very easy contrast to look at, those 10-10-10 practices. So when the Bears would have closed practices, this even goes back to when the Bears were still in Bourbonnais, those would be those 10-10-10 days. So they would work on, you know, probably some things deeper in the playbook that they didn't want.
It was all scripted.
It was all scripted, and they probably wanted to work on stuff that they could hide because they knew there were no cameras out there, blah, blah, blah. The closed practices this year are actually still, like, open, basically, because there's just other groups there and things like that, and they're pretty normal practices. We're not seeing them, like, be glorified walkthroughs like they used to be in those 10-10-10s under Nagy. So I think that that's a pretty big difference, actually.
What concerns you about the Eberflus way of life? Because I think we got a pretty good handle how it's going to be now. We have a lot of players that are sitting out with minor ailments. They're all day-to-day. But some notable players like Velus Jones, Kyler Gordon. We saw Braxton Jones leave briefly in practice. Anything concern you about the Eberflus way of life through 10 practices?
Kevin?
Not really. We're talking about practice.
Okay.
So, you know.
Okay, AI.
I thought it was kind of funny that Cole Kmet said it was the hardest practice he'd ever had in his football career. And then Eberflus clearly heard that and was like, it was just a regular practice. It shouldn't have been that big of a deal. But I don't see any acrimony being built from that. I mean, I just, like, we're going to learn so much about this guy from what happens in middle of September. Like, I'm just not learning yet how, what's going to happen, how he's going to handle his timeouts, how he's going to handle challenging plays, how he's going to handle just leading a team and halftime and all those little nuances of being a head coach. But just from what I've seen about, like, starting a program, handling practice, like, I don't really have any concerns about that so far. I think, as you guys kind of said, the injuries are going to come. I just think this team's too young and has too many guys that need to prove something to be upset about what's going on. Like, I'll take Eddie Jackson, for example. Like, we haven't heard any complaints from Eddie Jackson. If anything, I think he's actually seemed energized by what's going on. But if I'm going to be maybe a little cynical, if you're Eddie Jackson and you just saw all those veterans get cut, you know the way your contract is structured, if you want to make a lot of money, you better be have a good year. You better buy in. Because if you don't, they'll cut you, and whoever's going to sign you is not going to give you anywhere near the money that's due on the rest of his contract. So I just think that, Eberflus is, I don't know if fortunate's the right word, but like if he came into the 2014 Bears with this, it might not have gone well. But in 2022, with so many young guys, every free agent that's here is trying to make a name for himself. I think it's probably a good match.
Yeah, it's how you reboot the culture. It's how you have to do it. And you can only have the people that are buying in involved. Otherwise, it becomes a problem. I think my concern to answer the question is just still on the offensive line. Like, I'm not seeing... I'm very intrigued by this Braxton Jones stuff, but it's based more on the fact that they keep running them out there with the ones rather than anything, you know, totally impressive that I've seen. I think I got to see it in the preseason games first. And I think that the Tevin Jenkins thing's been concerning. And, you know, why is Riley Reiff back at right tackle? This is a guy that had some ankle issues in the past. Is he not quite the same guy? I think that's where I'm just a little still concerned about the depth. How many rookies who are late round draft picks still getting rotated in there, and what that could potentially mean for the quarterback? Because the last thing you want is for Justin Fields to suffer an injury that could potentially make this like a wasted season.
Here are my answers. I like that. Let's phrase it this way. Eberflus strikes me more of that CEO-like head coach than Matt Nagy ever was. And I think that's positive, and I think it's needed right now for this rebuild. He lets his coaches coach, and everything feels very purposeful in terms of letting his coaches coach. He's letting Alan Williams learn on the job a bit more after taking over the defense, after not being a defensive coordinator for several years. He's helping Luke Getsy find his way as a first-time play caller. I like all of that. Everything seems very purposeful, also with the direction of how they, like what they want their identity to be. Matt Nagy never found his identity for this team. Just never did. It's not good when that's a question 2-3 years into the program. Matt Eberflus knows what he wants this team to be, and every drill, every message seems purposeful with intent to get that team to what he wants it to be. I like that. Even like doing the scout team stuff. I like that a lot. What concerns me, it's not so much the coaching style. It's not so much the drills or, you know, maybe doing too much scouted looks and stuff like that. It's the you could see the devoid of talent. It's pretty apparent. We've covered how many training camps now? 10? 11? I do remember the training camp where they had Alshon Jeffrey and, you know, Brandon Marshall, like, and Martellus Bennett. Like, holy moly. Like, that, like those are some freaking players. They're dominant. You still Lance Briggs and Kyle Fuller coming in. Those were players. The Bears have some good ones, but they need more. That's my number one concern, is you watch these practices play out. Like, we should not be checking the rosters so many times. We just shouldn't.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's like it seems like they're already churning that roster. Yeah, I think the biggest example of that so far, John's, I think I mentioned this last week too, is just like when you watch Darnell Mooney run routes compared to everybody else on the field, there's a pretty big difference.
Yes.
Like that's an NFL football player. I don't know how many other guys out there you're looking at and you're like, oh yeah, that's an NFL football player.
A lot of
fringe players.
Highlight of training camp. Like, the Bears should not be promoting Nathan Peterman deep balls to Kevin Shaw. I'm sorry. I don't think that's generally a good thing. Neither of those guys are going to be on the 53-man roster against the aforementioned 49ers.
You know, Luke Getsy was asked on Friday, you know, why there haven't been a whole lot of explosive plays, and he disagreed with that assertion. I mean, how many 20-plus pass plays can you got? I mean, we can count them on one hand, probably, that have taken place. Maybe he's counting other plays, and he's seen things that we're not seeing. But, like, yeah, I've said this a bunch on this podcast. I've written this. Like, I just want there to be a day that the offense lights it up, because you just want to see it. You just want to see everything click. And even bad offenses have those good days here and there. And like, we just haven't had that yet still. We haven't had that day where Justin Fields just automatic and guys are catching every ball and they're moving the ball downfield with ease. It's typical the defense is ahead of the offense at camp, but it's not like this is a great defense either. So you're right. Like, you're just this team, that's where you see the difference. It's just the talent void. They just can't. It's a talent void combined with learning a brand new playbook on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're like me, an outfit, good or bad, can impact your entire day. Wearing a starchy shirt, that just doesn't feel good. You're not comfortable. It's hard to look good and feel good at the same time. But that's where Roan comes in, because men's closets were due for a radical reinvention, and Roan stepped up to the challenge. Roan's commuter collection is the most comfortable, breathable, and truly versatile set of products known to man. They have products for every occasion. We're talking about the world's most comfortable pants, dress shirts, quarter zips, polos, blazers. They look great as individual pieces that work seamlessly together. Roan's signature four-way stretch fabric is breathable, flexible, and works everywhere, from your commute to work to even the 19th hole. It's time for unparalleled confidence without all the hassle. My favorite Roan shirt is this white dress shirt. Looks like a dress shirt, but it also looks casual at the same time. It's got anti-odor technology. They call it Gold Fusion, and it doesn't get wrinkled. It stays fresh and clean all day long. No lingering odors or anything like that. The Commuter Collection is easy to care for while staying fresh and odor-free. The Commuter Collection can get you through any workday, straight to whatever comes next. Head to roan.com/Adam. Use promo code Adam to save 20% off your entire order. That's 20% off your entire order when you head to Roan. That's rhone.com/Adam. Use code Adam. It is time to find your corner office comfort.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
You see this? A family watching baseball on DirecTV with no satellite dish in sight.
Let's heckle them.
You call that changing the channel?
Choke up on the remote, buddy.
I hope getting all these games on DirecTV makes up for your mother not pre-chewing your sunflower seeds.
DirecTV has the most MLB games. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Terms and restrictions apply.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Okay, next topic. Hoagie Cat. That doesn't really roll off your tongue. Okay, Adam.
Well, I don't know why you keep calling
me
that.
I don't know. I don't know why either. You started to hit on this a little bit. Let's go on the positive side of things. Which position group has impressed you the most through 10 days of practice? Like, which position group do you feel good about going into the regular season? Because I think you could tell, like, in terms of first impressions, you get a good feel for what they have talent-wise and chemistry-wise at this point.
Yeah, I think when they were all out there on the field, the answer was the secondary.
Agreed.
I think it's a noticeable upgrade. The things that continue to stand out even beyond the first-teamers, once you go deeper in the depth chart, those guys are making more plays on the ball. Like, that emphasis, I feel like, is paying off. You're constantly seeing hands on the football, whether it's in the air or how many balls have we seen punched out after a catch, even, or right at the point of a catch? It's every single day A lot of times in one-on-ones, like a guy will make a catch, and then the DB who got beat will catch up and pop it out. Like, you know, if that happens in a football game, you can live with that. Yeah, you got beat, but you came back and created a takeaway. Boom. You know, so that I feel like is the group when healthy, because all of a sudden over the last 3 days, those DBs have been out like crazy. And are you guys worried about Kyler Gordon at all? Like, he sure has missed a lot of practice time, even going back to OTAs.
A little bit, yeah, because it goes back to OTAs.
Yeah, that's what's starting
to... Now he's out there, he's wearing his jersey, he's on the bike, you see him. Like, he's active amongst his teammates. He's not just, like, standing there feeling hurt. He doesn't look like he's really hurt. But, yes, I want him on the field playing football. I almost said baseball, but football.
But it just starts to make me wonder what he's dealing with that might be chronic. You know what I mean? When it's nothing specific and it's something he was dealing with in the spring relatively quickly, maybe it's something he can play through just fine, but I don't know. It's just a little, it makes me a little uneasy.
Kyle Shanahan's ears just perked up.
Okay.
Talking again. Injuries.
Hello, Kyle, again. Answer the question, Kevin.
I think that Jalen Johnson and Jaquan Brisker have probably been two of the top four players at camp. In terms of making plays,
ooh, who are the other two now?
I think Justin Jones had a really good camp.
Yeah,
wrote about him today at The Athletic, by the way. They're a little tease. Blug. Go check that out. A nice conversation with Justin Jones last week. And Mooney.
Every
camp, David Montgomery looks really good, but it's hard because it's like the running game. You just don't know. But like he just always. I mean, talk about a guy who like he. He takes every rep, it like resembles his personality almost. Like he just takes every rep so like 100%, to go the cliche. But because of Jalen Johnson, Jaquan Brisker, I would also agree that the secondary has, when healthy, been the best unit. Here's the problem. I don't know what the second best unit has been.
I got one for you, but let me play devil's advocate about the secondary.
Is it the equipment staff? Because I think they've had a great camp.
I think... You could tell they have like the size, skill, and speed advantage over the receivers, right? Like, are they? I think they're good, but are they as good as we're seeing, or will be going up against?
Because the wide receivers suck.
Yes.
Yeah.
Outside Darnell Mooney and Cole Kmet, who could still box you out.
Yeah.
What do they always say about those small school prospects? You got to see them dominate their competition. So I think it's okay that we're seeing the secondary win as many, one-on-ones. But you're right. I mean, it's not going to matter as much if these guys can't contain Debo Samuel and Kittle.
I was just about to mention those two. Big test right away. But here's another position group I got for you. I think the running back group is good.
Yeah.
Explosive, can do a lot of things. Montgomery, Herbert, Ebner, Evans.
I like Ebner.
Yes. Yes, they got some players there. Now, this probably doesn't bode well for David Montgomery in terms of getting a long-term deal unless he breaks out and has a massive year and you have to re-sign him. But they got some guys that can move that ball and move it violently and quickly. One cut with that outside zone. They got some players. Pass-catching options. I like that group.
You know, I think the way this team is structured, it's good to have your running backs be really deep because you're going to have to run the ball well. Like, this team is going to be built on that they're going to have to run the ball in defense. They're going to have to win low-scoring games. And if you look back to, last year, one of the problems with trying to win games like that was how many lapses do we see in the secondary and big plays to our team. So if your secondary is good, you can play those grinded-out games. You can force the teams to dink and dunk. So if those are your strengths, you're okay with that because that's probably the way you're built right now is you got to win games 17-13. Hashtag. Bears. It's the way it's always been, right, boys?
Yeah. Yeah.
The faces change, the names change, but it's still a Chicago Bears. Got to win with defense.
Well, in a lot of ways, it does feel like every camp's the same. One of the low-key great things the Bears have done over the last really since we've covered the team, is how they've handled the running backs. And I think you can even group Matt Forte into that conversation, but especially since they moved on from Matt Forte, like, they don't spend big money on the position. They draft one, it seems like, every year, sometimes more than one. And you just keep churning those guys in there. That's just good, smart football business at this point. And I would even argue with Forte, even though they paid him and he ended up, you know, getting the tag and then signing a long-term deal. Like, that was money in that situation where it was worth it. Like, he was an exception to where it was worth paying him, and you still didn't break a huge bank on him. I don't know if David Montgomery fits that category, but I think we're going to learn a lot this year with some of these other options that we're talking about at that position. And I just like that they keep drafting one. Just keep drafting one every year, and you're going to be okay there. That's despite the fact that they really haven't had great offensive lines or even in the last 4 years, a great running scheme. But you could still tell, like, the backs are good, at least good enough.
Yeah, I'm convinced they can run the ball. I am.
As if only the Bears drafted positions like offensive tackle and quarterback the way they draft running backs. Because if you think about it, Hogue, it's a great point, because Jeremy Langford, Jordan Howard, Dave Montgomery, Khalil Herbert, and now Trent, and you throw Ebner into that. Kadeem Carey. So you're spanning three GMs here who use late round picks on guys that, you know, you could bring in, and in some cases guys that could take over as a starter. But the problem is it's 2022, and you don't necessarily want that to be the position that you're really, really good at drafting and handling. It is the easiest position to do that because you can just do it with late round picks and take your chances, as opposed to quarterback or offensive tackle, where the data tells us you have to find those guys in the first round. But my gripe for so many years was, well, at least take some chances in the day three just to have a guy and see what happens. And they've done that at running back, and they've been pretty successful at it. But I think you make a great point about Forte, because he was a rare back, and even it's only been, what, 10 years since that franchise tag? And the game has already changed so much since then, too.
Right, right.
So as much as Montgomery has a lot of Forte qualities to the way he plays, it's just a different game.
I think we can all agree that the offensive line is probably the most troubling, just until they get it all together. Although I do think adding Michael Schofield and Riley Reiff change the makeup of that line in a more positive way. So let me ask you this. What do you make of Braxton Jones's chances of staying at left tackle now for the full duration of camp? It's 5 days in a row now that we've seen him, other than when he briefly left on Saturday. 5 consecutive days where he got every snap at left tackle with the starting offense.
Yeah, I think I think the possibility of that being a thing is higher than what I thought it was going to be back in OTAs when we first saw him with the first team. I'm still a little skeptical that it's going to stick. I think part of it might be due to whatever Tevin Jenkins is dealing with, to whatever their evaluation of Larry Borum was at left tackle first, and maybe perhaps Riley Reiff's limitations to play the left side at this point in his career. So I guess what I'm saying is I could still see a scenario where if he struggles in the preseason, they go out and add help there. But I think this is a real situation where if he plays well in the preseason, he can win the job. And I don't know that my mind was that open to that idea back in May or June when we first started seeing him there with the first team.
Do you guys think when they signed Riley Reiff, they thought he would just step in and be the left tackle?
Probably.
And then they saw something and thought, maybe you're better suited on the right?
I think there's that, but I also think we need to give Braxton Jones credit, too. Like, I think that he has answered the bell. I think that he's clearly doing something behind the scenes in the meetings and understanding the offense and the scheme, and he clearly looks the part. I mean, he blows you away in terms of what he actually looks like. He looks like an NFL left tackle. It's can you handle the technique and the huge jump up in competition from Southern Utah to the NFL? And that part's still got to be answered. But the one thing, like, Johns, when you were talking earlier about some skepticism with the secondary because of who they're going up against, when it comes to Rexon Jones, like, he's facing real-ass defensive linemen every day. We're talking about Robert Quinn. We're talking about Al-Quadi Muhammad. We're talking about good players. So he's getting tested. He's getting that experience. So that tells me if he can handle it, especially after the pads went on, I think he checked that box. I think he impressed the coaches there. Why can't it translate to the preseason at this point?
Even the failure is good for him right now. Because let me tell you, on Sunday, there was failure. Robert Quinn made quick work, very quick work of him in a one-on-one drill.
Weren't the pads off Sunday?
Yes.
I'm not trying to make excuses, but that's back to it. That's a little bit of adjustment. Now all of a sudden the pads are off.
It's fair. That's fine.
Yeah.
I don't think his feet were in the right place. I don't think he was quick enough to keep up with the quickness of Robert Quinn. I feel like Quinn's hands were on him almost instantaneously on the snap. But again, the guy set the all-time sack record for the Bears last year. Or tied it. It's a good challenge to have. There was a play when they were backed up. I forget which drill it was. But they ran a stunt where Justin Jones came around. And it wasn't picked up. Came around Jones' side, the left side. And Eberflus actually gave the defense a sack on that one because it was just so abrupt, so quick. I know he feels to get passes off, but that was right there. But again, another learning moment where the Bears' big three technique made him pay for it.
Yeah, that first rep of pass rush, it reminds me of, remember Khalil Mack would do one rep a day in the pass rush drills, and it would just be game over for whoever was across from him. It was a little bit like that, and I wonder, I joked afterwards, I was like, I wonder if Robert Quinn heard that Luke Getsy quote about how Braxton Jones answered the bell the first time he faced Robert Quinn.
Ooh,
but
yeah.
What I liked about that is I forgot which player it was going in to replace Jones, and he put his hand up. He goes, no. He went right back to his spot. He did not want that to be, it wasn't Quinn who he faced again. He faced somebody else. Like, he made it a point that he wanted to return and fix it. Like, he knew that was, he got beat by, obviously, a guy who could be in the Hall of Fame one day. But, going back to the way this team was constructed for 2022, what a perfect opportunity to see if you've got something in a fifth-round pick from Southern Utah as your long-term left tackle. It would be one of the greatest draft finds. It's early, but the guy's proven it so far. You see what he does in the regular season. And if he's not a long-term guy, then you just draft another one. And you find another spot for him. I'm looking far into the future here. But, I would almost rather Braxton Jones be the day one left tackle than Riley Reiff when you're talking about the long-term vision of this team and what you're trying to build here. Riley Reiff is a one-year stopgap. He helps you. He helps bring veteran experience. He's a lesser Jason Peters of what Peters did last year. But if you've got something in Braxton Jones, you get him those reps and you have him kind of learn on the job, and you figure out a way to make sure that that's not hindering Justin Fields too much, which I think the last year's staff struggled to do.
Here's the biggest question of the day. I'll start with Kevin. Who is your Ladarius Mack Award winner thus far in camp?
The Tanner Gentry Ladarius Mack Daniel Braverman Award.
Okay, but can I have...
Those are different awards.
Yeah, especially... Sorry. What did Ladarius Mack show you that even led to that?
What number was he? 15?
Don't ask me. You should know.
There was one day in practice that I wrote down a player's name who looked good in the pass rush, and I checked my roster, it was Ladarius Mack.
And that was it.
You guys did a little thing where it's like, tell us somebody who impressed you in practice, and I looked at my notes like, hey, that guy had a good practice, and then it became a thing.
Because Dane Sonsenbacher and Tanner Gentry and those guys, they made some plays.
Yeah, Ladarius Mack won a pass rush drill here or there.
He had one good rep.
Yeah. And my Ladarius Mack Award for guys that have looked good in the pass rush drills, but might not actually be anything for this team, would probably be Sam Kamara.
Oh.
I noticed him in the pass rush drill the other day. So there you go.
That's your answer, Sam Kamara.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Do you have an award winner, Adam?
I wasn't asked the question.
Repeat the question for you. I don't know if I have one. It's like,
well, I'm trying to find out if Chris Fink is that guy or if he's actually somebody who can be useful in the slot and on special teams. I can't figure that out yet.
I'm not going to say that. Those are like the lessons learned of, you know, previous regimes. Like, you want to see him do that with the starters and against starters, right? I don't know. I don't know.
The problem with this offense, like not doing a whole lot in camp in terms of sustaining drives or making big pass plays we talked about earlier, is they're not opportunities for the Tanner Gentry, the Andy Fantuz, if you will, going in the way back machine.
Oh boy.
Like, they're just, I thought Chris Fink would be that guy. I thought Kevin Shaw would be that guy. I thought, you know, it'd be nice for the Bears if Byron Pringle was that guy. I know you guys talked about him last week, and he's made a couple plays, but it's just weird that the offense hasn't done enough where we've seen that one guy just catch pass after pass after pass, except for Darnell Mooney. And Dave Montgomery has caught a lot of passes. I'm convinced he's second on the team in training camp receptions.
I'll put it this way. Like, the whole premise of this question is to talk about players that you usually don't talk about, like guys that are catching your eye every day at practice. If I had to list certain ones, it's the running backs. It's Evans. It's Ebner. I want to say it's the linebackers, especially without Roquan Smith there. It's Joe Thomas. It's Matthew Adams. They seem like capable special teamers, capable fill-ins. But you notice them make plays. They're stopping Cole Kmet.
Yeah, I think you're naming a lot of guys, though, that are going to make the team.
Yeah. Yeah, but I don't think maybe the Ladarius Mack Award isn't named correctly, but just in terms of guys that I didn't expect to talk a lot about, those are four.
Yeah.
Okay, next question.
All right.
Last one for you, boys. This is a repeat question because it's an important topic that won't go away until we actually have a star in this position. 10 practices in. What have you seen from Justin Fields, and what would you like to see him do, add, improve on over the rest of camp?
I think I'm in the same spot I was when camp started on him, which I guess, considering my hope and expectation for him was to blow me away, then that would put me in like the slightly disappointed category. But that being said, I'm also not concerned with anything I've seen. I mean, there was like one really bad day, I thought, which I've been very clear about. Those days are going to happen. Always. Even if he's, you know, lighting it up every other day, you're going to have bad days. So I'm still willing to sit here and like let it be a process and understand that this offense is being installed and it's a system and the system's going to take care of him. And what really matters is what he does on the field once the game starts. But yeah, do I wish that there were some deep balls that were getting overthrown by 5-10 yards last week? Should those have been right in stride with the wide receivers? Yeah, ideally, but it's fine so far, is how I'll put it. It's been fine.
Kev?
Yeah, no, I'm just very, very lukewarm, very tepid. I he's been fine. I think you were hoping for spectacular. You're hoping for great. But he hasn't been bad. Which I guess is like a low bar, but it's the Chicago Bears. It's the quarterback position. And we all saw what, you know, Fields' numbers were last year. He struggled. I'll say this. What's impressed me most about the offense has been the scheme more so than, you know, the field. Like, I think it's been, we've seen, and maybe this is why we haven't seen a lot of deep balls, is because they're really just working on installing some of these plays. And shoot, maybe they know they're not going to have a lot of opportunities to throw the ball downfield with this offensive line and with this receiving core. But I feel, and you know, Hogue talked about this with the goal line stuff, and I think we've seen with Cole Kmet a lot in the way that they've gotten him open. Like, I'm more impressed by what Luke Getsy's playbook has started to show me. And I think that's helped put Justin Fields in more advantageous spots. But Fields probably isn't taking advantage of it at a high rate that he should. What I'm very interested to see, guys, is what's the game plan for Tuesday in Soldier Field for the offense? Like, do you try to have Justin Fields let it rip a little bit, you know? Like, to use a phrase from, you know, The Simpsons, you know, I'm just going to hit some dingers, just let him throw it deep. Or are you nervous about doing that because the offense has been the way it is, and you don't want everyone to leave Soldier Field thinking that their quarterback's not very good? Like, I'm very curious to see, like, how that, if that has any role in the way that they build their practice plan.
Maybe, but is there really going to be that many people there?
It's a Tuesday. I'll be there.
I have questions about this. The Packers had a practice the other night at Lambeau Field that was on TV in Wisconsin. The Eagles last night, I believe, had 30,000 people at their stadium. Now, when we first started, I want to say like maybe 6-7 years ago, the Bears would do this family fest on Saturday evenings.
During Lollapalooza.
But it was Lollapalooza weekend. And
are you telling me the planning isn't good?
I'm saying that maybe if you had a stadium in Arlington Heights that you owned, it might be a little bit easier to pull these things off instead of having to do it on a Tuesday morning in a work week. Right? Doesn't the whole thing just feel forced?
This is where my bias as a reporter comes in, because I love a late morning weekday as opposed to Saturday night during Lollapalooza. But you're right. I mean, Eagles had a night practice last night, I believe. Who else? The Bills filled their stadium for a night practice. Like, it's become a common thing around the league to have these nighttime scrimmages at the stadium.
And it's not like the Bears don't have loyal fans like all these other teams that we're talking about. They're there.
Right. Wasn't there a year that they did it in Bourbonnais at the Olivet Nazarene Stadium?
Yeah.
In Soldier Field?
Yeah, they used to have like one night practice, one or two. Lovey would have more, actually, I feel like. He'd have a couple. And it would actually be...
Well, Lovey's schedule varied as opposed to the other guys we've covered.
Yeah. Well, Lovey used to practice in the afternoon, like 3:00.
Hogue, you're a football coach. Yeah. Do you think maybe that the coach is like, I don't want to have a practice at 7 p.m. We practice at 10:35 a.m. That's how things go here.
Well, maybe, but I don't know. At some point, like, you're a professional football organization and have to... I guess my point is, if you're going to do a Soldier Field practice for the fans, why not make it a bigger deal than it is? I don't know. Like, are they treating... I mean, part of me feels like they're just going to treat tomorrow like a walkthrough for Sunday or Saturday. I mean, like, here's the stadium, here's the locker room. But in my mind, I'm like, isn't that what the preseason game is for?
We'll just have to wait till 2027, right?
Yeah.
Arlington Heights Family Fest on a Saturday night.
I don't know what stadium you're building that's going to be ready by then, but okay.
It's awfully quick. To go back to the Fields question, I think his processing could speed up a bit. I like to see him throw with a little bit more anticipation. But I say that knowing he's still in a process of learning this new offense. Like, there's plays that Simeon and Peterman would make where they throw with the anticipation. They don't have the arm talent that Justin Fields has. They don't have his ability. But they're throwing with anticipation. They're throwing guys open. We haven't seen enough of that from Justin Fields, but I say that knowing that his processing is part of this process. He's learning a new offense. I'd like to see that improve as camp plays out. He's got opportunities to do that.
Yeah. I think that's a good point. I think that's a specific thing that, again, I think that's why the importance of him playing on Saturday in the preseason games. We'll see what it looks like. Even though the coverages will probably be relatively vanilla, and we probably shouldn't put too much stock in it.
The Matt Nagy revenge game. Dun, dun, dun.
But that's where, like, it's almost like a lose-lose, because it's, if he goes and lights it up, you're like, well, remember that one Mitch Trubisky game? Against the Broncos, his first time he ever took the field at Soldier Field, and he looked like.
Remember Justin Fields' first preseason game against the Dolphins?
Oh yeah, when everything was fast or slow. I mean, everything was slowed down. Yeah,
yeah, he looked pretty good.
Yeah, but I'd much rather it look like that than the alternative.
Right,
right. So that's what I mean. 100%. It's a lose-lose. So if he lights it up, you're like, well, it doesn't count. But if he sucks, everyone's going to be like, "Whoa, this is a huge problem."
Hey, speaking of Bears preseasons of Bears past, do you guys remember when the Dolphins came here for a preseason game? Might have been 2014, and they ran like the zone read, just all over the, like, it was like 75-yard run, 50-yard run. Ryan Tannehill like kept it for like the Bears linebackers had no idea where they were going. And the Bears ended up having the worst defense in NFL history, or in franchise history that year.
Well, so you're going to the Mel Tucker, Mark Trestman era.
Mm-hmm. And that was the same year, I believe, as the Seattle game.
I remember that
one. The infamous.
Okay. Yeah. Enough of the bad memories.
All right. That's it. You got to go, Hogue.
They have the same road slate as 2014. So this is going to be a theme this year, by the way. Remember only if 2014.
Only if you make it one, Kevin, because nobody wants to remember that year.
Wait till New England week. We're going to have some fun facts that week.
You know what I just realized, guys? I've been playing drops the whole show, and it was potted down the whole time.
There was a time that I was like, this would be a perfect opportunity for the Mike Glennon no drop, and I didn't hear anything.
No.
There it is.
There he is. It's our good friend, Mike.
Yeah, I did. Here's some of what you missed.
I think we haven't won enough under the leadership of George McCaskey, and that's what we're working on.
And then when Johns was calling me Hoagie Cat for some reason.
Anyway, who cares?
We coined the name.
Yeah. I'm like, because I could hear it in my ear, but you were talking over it. I'm like, wait a minute, they can't hear it. I'm an idiot.
Well...
That's another drop, just me saying I'm an idiot. Yes, we can play that a lot. It applies
finally,
a lot.
Can't take that one, please.
Okay. Probably not.
All right, we're out of here. I got to go. Got to go downtown. No days off. What are you guys doing on the rest of your off day?
Working.
Yeah, that's how it is. Working. Kevin froze. He's just gone.
He's looking at something else. Yeah. You can tell.
Our follow us on Twitter at Adam Hogue, at Adam Johns, at K Fishbane. Plenty of coverage coming all week long. The Soldier Field practice is tomorrow on Tuesday, and we'll be back Thursday with our second episode of the week. It's game week. There's a preseason game Saturday.
I was going to say, we got a preseason game to preview.
Yeah. All right. Well, Kevin's officially gone now, so I think we should just wrap this thing up. We'll talk to you Thursday. See ya.
Anyway, who cares?
Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.